You're listening to Inform and Connect, a podcast of the American Foundation for the Blind. And now your host, Melanie Goodspeed.
Hey, everybody. This is Melody Goodspeed with the American Foundation for the Blind Inform and Connect podcast. I am really having a great time. I've got my colleague here, Tony Stevens. Tony, how's
Hello,
it going today?
Melody. It is going well. I'm excited to not just be a voice at the start of the podcast, but I'm a human. This is not AI.
I know. And speaking of AI, I love that we are with a really cool person, which we'll reveal in a minute. And we're actually in face-to-face. So, like, I know you're real.
Yes, yes. We can confirm that.
And we did also have a really good adventure for this. I mean, we found the kitchen since this is the first time I've been to our new office.
Yeah. So for folks that don't know, the American Foundation for the Blind, you know, since the pandemic has adopted very much a virtual work setting. We have employees that are really all over the country.
Yes,
but,
everywhere.
But the core, you know, we still have in a sense a headquarters, and it's based in Arlington, Virginia, literally right across the Potomac River from Georgetown, neighborhood in Washington, D.C., a neighborhood called Roslyn, and in Virginia. And we're in this office setting, you know, sort of a corporate office setting with halls and
skipped floor numbers.
It's a very interesting building, so to say the least. But yeah, we were excited. We finally found the kitchen.
Yes, we were like the three charging forward. Well, actually, five of us charging forward and got water. And so we're all very happy and hydrated.
Yeah.
So. Yes. Big discovery today. So
what has 14 legs in search of water? Three employees.
Yes, it's good times.
One special employee.
Yes. We're hard workers.
That we'll be introducing in a second.
Yes, we will. So, Tony, I'm also really excited today that we get to go out and meet with some of our donors, which is super cool. It's so great to meet people that really believe in our work. And I'm really excited that you and I get to do that today with our special guest. And new to the scene here, we have our very new president and CEO, Eric Bridges. Eric, joining the crazy. How
Hi,
are you?
Hi, Melody and Tony. I am more than happy to join in the crazy. Yeah. It's great to be here. Great to be with the two of you.
Welcome aboard.
It was wonderful finding the kitchen.
Yes.
Yes, it was.
It was very joyous.
It's the little things in life find excitement in, like water. No, Eric, no, thank you so much. I mean, this is exciting because this is kind of, you know, a lot of folks that came to the AFB Leadership Conference and the Helen Keller Achievement Awards had a chance to meet you in person the first time since you came in. How long has it been now?
Tomorrow it will be 1 month.
Yeah.
So April 12th will be 1 month.
Yeah. Yay! We're celebrating.
Exactly. We'll have a 1 month anniversary.
Yeah.
What? Anniversary means annual years, I guess. So it's 1/12th of an anniversary. But no, you know, congratulations. And the entire team and staff has been so excited to have someone take the helm as president and CEO. But I have known you for a while, which is exciting to work for you again, which is fantastic. Melody, I'm not hijacking your show. So
No, I love that, this talking. Yeah. But Eric, can you kind of tell our audience a little bit about you? Like, we want to hear about you, your journey, blindness journey, your everything. And we want it all, Eric. Just start where you
want
to start.
Want it all. Okay. So, I've lived out here in the DC area for 22 years. I came to live in this area after having graduated from the University of Iowa. And go Hawkeyes, by the way. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in Iowa in a town called Dubuque, which is on the Mississippi River on the eastern side of Iowa, across from Illinois and Wisconsin. And have two younger sisters, and my mom and dad still live most of the year in Iowa. And, you know, my upbringing probably was not that much different than a lot of other, you know, blind or visually impaired kids. I began to lose my vision at the age of 4, indirectly due to juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, and some of the inflammation that was in my joints made its way into my eyes. And so it was challenging. I gradually lost my vision from the age of 4 until I was about 17. But if I'm being totally honest, that that thing that we call sight, the sighted community would think was awful at age 16 and 17. So, you know, shadows and things like that. And so, you know, I went to public school all the way through. My parents are wonderful advocates and have been wonderful advocates for me being able to stay in public school. They had to fight for me not to be sent to the School for the Blind in Iowa. And I am very much pro School for the Blind when it is appropriate for the child to receive services from the School for the Blind. In this case, it was not a good academic or social environment for me to be put in. So they got a lawyer, and literally it was just a couple months before the ADA was signed into law that this whole thing went down, and advocated on my behalf to begin to learn Braille and how to use a white cane in public school. So I learned advocacy pretty early, and I learned it from my parents. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Because I think sometimes parents who, I mean, you are a parent, and I'm a parent, and yes. Tony's a parent. So all three of us are parents. Absolutely. And how that, you know, learning how to advocate for your kids, especially when, you know, they're facing something that, you know, you just don't know about. I mean, I know when I lost my eyesight rather suddenly at 26, my parents didn't know what to do. And, you know, it's hard. But thanks for sharing that. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, maybe one fun thing, a school experience that you remember?
I remember a lot of embarrassing things in school, because here's the deal. I didn't want to admit that I was losing my sight.
Right.
Okay. And that's pretty common. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to learn Braille. I didn't want to learn to use a cane. And one of the consequences of not wanting to use a cane when you have, I don't know, depth perception issues, let's say, is that you bounce yourself off of glass door dividers. You trip downstairs. There's a blooper reel out there probably of all the goofy things that I did in high school, you know, thinking that, you know, girls would find me a lot more attractive if I didn't use my cane, not thinking that, you know, bouncing myself off a wall probably was not all that attractive to girls. Just saying.
I mean,
so, you know, so the logic there was flawed, I'll admit. But I, you know, I also had I had braces, and I had moderate acne. So I was like, I was a bundle of self-confidence.
It's all the things, man.
Yeah, it was wonderful. But I, you know, high school was not a lot of fun for all those reasons. And you know, I eventually figured out that in order for me to be independent and to be successful, I needed to learn how to use a cane, how to get around independently. I got my Braille, you know, overall ability to read to a really good place. Some of that was my parents bargaining with me, actually, allowing me to read Stephen King books in eighth grade in order to get my proficiency up. Now, that's a double-edged sword, so I got it. I got my proficiency up, but I had nightmares.
Yeah. I mean, it's a thing, literally.
Pet Sematary.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Cujo. That's... Yeah.
Yeah.
I was enthralled with those books, but I also was 13 and had lots of nightmares. But, yeah, those are some of my school experiences.
I love it. I think it's important to share these things because it's, you know, that age is hard. Anyway, I think, you know, it's really, really hard.
Yeah.
Can you talk to us a little bit after? Let's talk about college.
I loved college. It was the greatest thing. I also went to class sometimes.
That's good. Sometimes we have to go.
Yeah. Well, I viewed college very much as the ability for me to set my own path in life, to sort of figure out me and who I was. I spent a lot of high school trying to fit in. And once I got to college, I just said, I'm just going to be me. And I wound up joining a fraternity, Phi Kappa Psi, at the University of Iowa, and was very involved in the fraternity. I lived in the fraternity house for a couple of years, was vice president of the chapter, and learned a lot about leadership. I learned a lot about how a lot of guys living in a house can make it very dirty. but I learned a lot of tough things. I mean, you know, holding one another accountable for our actions, being in a fraternity, you know, and doing what you say you're going to do in terms of chores in the house and all this other stuff. And a lot of it has direct applicability to the rest of my life. And that's one of the things that I've taken from that experience. And, you know, there's all these stereotypes of the frat boy and, you know, keg stands and all this other stuff. And we had fun, but there was also we had the highest grade point average of any fraternity on campus. One year we had the highest grade point average of any of the chapters in Phi Kappa Psi, which was really cool.
That is awesome.
You know, there was a lot of emphasis on academics and philanthropy and being out in the community and giving back. And then there was the social standpoint that, you know, I'll just be frank, it was awesome. You know, getting to know girls, getting to just go out to football games. I went to a Foo Fighters concert. They opened up actually for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which was really cool.
Nice.
In 2000. And it was one of the funner things I did in college. Funner, not a word. One of the more fun things.
And
I
what
did
was your major
college.
At this school?
Why, my good man, I majored in journalism and mass communications. Yes, sir. Look at me.
We're so proud.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, I thoroughly enjoyed my time in college. I had folks that I could look up to. One of the interesting things about my progression through vision loss is that there weren't a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
Peers in particular, that had vision loss. So I didn't have that. I didn't have it in college until I joined what was then known as the National Alliance of Blind Students, which was an affiliate of the American Council of the Blind. And I found a kinship with those folks that lived all over the country. They were college students that were blind or visually impaired, and learned that I wasn't alone, and I learned some tips and tricks, as to how to advocate with my university for, you know, alternate format materials and things of that nature. So it was good. And that also allowed me another social avenue as well. So
it's 2000, 2001. What year did you graduate?
2000.
In 2000.
Mm-hmm.
And you are, you know, a journalism mass communication major. What was it that brought you to Washington instead of like going to Des Moines and working for the Register or going to Chicago and working in media?
Sure.
Why Washington?
So I had an interest in, there were two things, sports and politics. So I spent the first couple of years at the J School thinking that I was going to try to do this sports casting thing, right? So mm-hmm. either a sports anchor on TV or radio. My ultimate goal was to be on ESPN and to be a sports center anchor, which at the time was kind of this iconic, idealistic.
Yeah. Dan Patrick and
Dan Patrick
huge,
and
yeah.
Keith Olbermann
yeah.
back in those days. Yeah. but you know, the other interest that I had was politics, and I applied for a congressional internship and was accepted. And that brought me out here the summer of 2000 to D.C. And I interned for then Senator Tom Harkin from the great state of Iowa and spent the summer here, which also happened to coincide with the 10th anniversary of the ADA. Mm-hmm. And
which Harkin passed through for folks that don't
yes,
know.
He was,
you know.
And so consequently, I got to do some really cool things that summer, attend some really great events, and be in some really interesting company. The senator brought me to a lot of the ADA events, frankly, events that the other interns didn't get to go to. They got to just open up mail and answer phones and all that. But I got to be with him along the rope line for the 10th anniversary celebration at the FDR Memorial.
Mm.
That President Clinton was at, and I got to meet the president, and I got to hang out with Senator Kennedy. He also was a big proponent and champion of the ADA and was good friends with Senator Harkin.
Yeah. Was he head of the Health Education Committee at that time, wasn't he?
Yes. Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions.
Pension, the Health Committee.
The Health
yeah.
Committee, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a really fun summer. And one of the things that came out of that summer is I fell in love with Washington. I thought it was so much fun. There's so much to do. And decided that I wanted to figure out a way to come out here and work. And National Industries for the Blind provided me that opportunity. They learned that I was here doing an internship. They began to recruit me. And then later that year after I graduated, they hired me to come out and work and live in Alexandria. So I've been here in this area ever since.
So I want to... Oh.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, here's a fun fact. All three of us have worked at the National Industries for the Blind.
They have, you know, in terms of for people that are trying to find work, I mean, NIB is still one of those places that you know, a lot of people do turn to, in a sense, when you're, you know, just trying to get your first footing. It's probably much easier now. But when we were younger, Eric, I'm leaning more to you because I know our age is closer probably than Melody with you. I'm the older one here, the old gray dog. But you know, it is just trying to find jobs, like in the sense of the old. For me, it was always in college, like free internships and things I would do just to do anything because I couldn't go work retail. I couldn't go, you know, there were so few options. This was right as the ADA was passed when I was just starting college that, you know, it just wasn't, their opportunities weren't there like they are now.
No, and you know, it's interesting that you raised that. I I did interviews, you know, my last semester for jobs with big companies that I was qualified to work for, and there was always some reason, just always some reason for them not to hire me, and the one that sticks out the most is Sears. Now, I know like Sears is a punchline now, but back in those days, Sears was enormous, and they had an executive training program that they would go in particular to the Midwest, like Big Ten schools, and recruit talent. And I made it all the way to the... through several rounds of interviews, and I made it to their headquarters for the final like day and a half of testing and interviews. So I was there with like 20 other people my age, and they were going to select, I think it was like 5 or 7 of us. And I didn't wind up going through a lot of the same interviews or testing that the others did. And I asked the question, like, why not? And they said, well, you can't see. I said, yes, that's true. But, you know, why am I here? You know, if I'm not going to go through what everybody else did is having to go through. And they said, well, we like you, but we're not sure that you can handle the interviews or the testing that we're going to put these people through. And I said, okay. So that didn't work. That didn't make Eric feel good. These are the struggles.
It's the things that fuel that passion, though, when you realize all the, you know, I think of the, and Melody, probably the same for you, but like the things that like people do to help lift us up to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you encounter that sour experience, it's like you realize how many more people are. I got into the whole blindness advocacy space after decades of working in other advocacy orgs on other issues, but it was after a bad experience that was like, I've been so lucky my whole life. And I don't know, Eric, if it's the same for you feeling, but like you begin to realize that, you know, someone has to get in and try to help change this. Is that what kind of fed you toward advocacy some, this idea that, you know, you've had these experiences where it's like, even with all the opportunities you've had, there's still, you know, systemic barriers and things, and for you to go in and want to advocate for that?
What was it that made you the advocate? I think so. I don't know. I've been called a bloody do-gooder at times. I'm good with that, by the way. but you know, I want for our community to have the same playing field, be on the level playing field, and then mm-hmm. be judged by our merit and not by whether or not we can see. And that experience that I had, you know, in college, and then I had a couple of other experiences that were not great. Also, even after, you know, just looking for other employment in my career, and you know, that stuff fuels me. But the other thing that fuels me is success, and looking around and seeing individuals who are blind or have low vision being successful in the world. The world is not built for us.
No.
Yeah.
There needs to be more of us in different areas of our economy actively participating. And so, you know, I admittedly, I came from this came to this job from the American Council of the Blind, which is a member-driven consumer organization in our field. And, you know, being able to work on, you know, areas of, you know, digital inclusion is, you know, that area in particular is huge because it cuts across education, employment, transportation. Again, seeking to level the playing field for us to be able to have equal access.
Well, the digital world touches every part of every aspect of our life now.
Yes.
It's somehow tethered to digital. And
yeah.
I mean, talk a little about that with you, you know, one of your rises in success, and you talk about success also feeds you the same way as, you know, wanting to be a bloody do-gooder. I'm a bloody do-gooder when my guide dog runs me into a wall. usually is what happens. But the digital space was where a lot of your, on a national stage, you had an amazing opportunity to work. And really, one of the wonderful things you're bringing to AFB and sort of bridging, going back to like you talked about, you know, working with you know, being an intern with Senator Harkin, who did a great job of bringing together corporate partners, public partners, advocacy related, you know, people in the field. But one of the great things you've been doing is walking alongside the major tech companies and helping them bolster their accessibility. Anybody that'll listen, I know your career has been spent just sort of, you know, walking with them and having them walk with you in a sense, and the work you've been doing at ACB and other places. Talk a little bit about that and how that has felt, to, and you know, I know you're so humble in a sense, but you know, you've been able to be part of the pulse of the rise of accessibility and digital inclusion. And how has that felt?
It's been a wild ride, and it's not over. This is the song that never ends. Melody, you know that song?
Yes.
It just keeps going on.
It just keeps going like infinity. Yeah.
Indeed, yeah. There you go, Tony. You got it. But this journey that you know, ACB was on, and they, you know, the membership really dictated that, you know, the staff work on this area today called digital inclusion. It really started 15 plus years ago. And I'll never forget receiving an email. It was a Wall Street Journal article that a colleague of mine forwarded to me. The title of the article was "A Buttonless World." And it was an interview that the journal had done with Steve Jobs. And this was in like June of 2007. And this article profiles Steve Jobs' mindset, his thinking, and what was going to be happening very soon, which was the introduction of the iPhone.
Yeah.
A buttonless device, ostensibly, you know? And so looking at that and seeing that we were continuing to be left behind. I mean, it wasn't just the iPhone that was going to leave us behind. We were already behind in a lot of areas from a technology standpoint, and reliance almost solely on assistive technology and not commercially available technology to make our world accessible. So, you know, I as a representative of the American Council of the Blind and the American Foundation for the Blind, at that time it was Paul Schrader and Mark Reichert. You know, we joined with the hearing loss, deaf and hard of hearing communities to introduce a piece of legislation that sought to really level the playing field in the digital realm as it pertained to smartphones and your home theater, so televisions and the cable box and the DVR in the cable box and all of that. It also, we began to deal with audio description, which today, you know, in streaming services, there's like thousands of hours of it available with movies. Back then, there were like a couple of TV channels.
Occasional Sesame Street.
Yeah. There's like some of the PBS stuff, and then CBS and Fox voluntarily did audio description for a couple of shows. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. We introduced this thing called the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act. And over about a three-year period, it moved through the legislative process, and eventually it was signed into law. And it was a huge achievement for our community. And in negotiating the language for the legislation that became law and then implemented regulations, I was able to develop relationships with the companies that were going to be impacted by this.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud to say that, you know, ACB and myself as their representative, we still have those relationships with those companies today. And some of those companies are represented on AFB's board of trustees, Apple and Google in particular. And, you know, through the process of the regulations coming out, it provided us the opportunity to reach out to the companies that were going to be impacted and say, hey, would love to work with you on making your product or service usable and not just the accessibility compliance, which is pretty low bar that exists in most regulations. And, you know, there was significant interest in doing that by those companies. So we're referring to companies like Comcast, like Microsoft, Apple and Google and others. And along the way, built very strong, trusted partnerships with these companies and still have them today. And, you know, I'm very grateful to have had the opportunity to represent a segment of the blind community to do outreach and build relationships with these companies. You know, these companies, none of this thing we call technology happens in a straight line. Companies introduce products that are accessible, and then they will introduce the next generation of that product, and something has changed, yeah. And it's not as accessible. But really what we're seeing today, if you look at today versus 15 years ago, there's a lot more commercially available, accessible products and services to our community than there ever has been.
Yeah. It's and exciting.
It is.
Yes. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we're running out of time, I know, but this won't be the last time. Hopefully we'll be able to reconnect for other conversations.
Yes. I have one question though, if that's okay.
Sure.
So with your passion and everything you talked about, which is great, what do you see doing here at AFB to keep that moving forward? Give us one thing.
Well, frankly, the technology component, the digital inclusion component is very big, I think, for AFB. And it's kind of twofold, actually three. It's public policy, it's research, the study that was released last month that showed some of the barriers that we still face for digital inclusion.
Yeah. Barriers to Digital Inclusion Survey.
There you go.
Check it out online, afb.org.
The public policy component of it, which is, you know, legislation that was introduced in the last Congress that, you know, we want to have move this Congress. And then Talent Lab and the ability to train individuals who are blind or have low vision to work in the technology field and to have them receive that training so that they could go and be qualified to work at a Comcast or an Apple or a JP Morgan Chase. You know, the digital inclusion, digital accessibility component, I think, runs through this organization. And I think it's an area of advocacy and an area where we can be great partners to a number of companies in corporate America.
I love it. And I couldn't agree more. I'm really excited to go on this adventure. Aren't you, Tony?
It's super exciting. I mean, it is like just because knowing what's on the horizon, right, of opportunity in terms of technology, in terms of inclusion, and you know, it's exciting. You know, communications is my hat here at AFB, and it's to think of the opportunity to be able to tie into that narrative is a lot of fun.
Yes, and my hat of development, I'm really looking forward to sharing it with our supporters, our partners, I like to call them our AFB family. So I can't thank you both enough for this great conversation. We will have many more. And I'm really looking forward to us finding our way out of here.
I know, right?
Follow the dogs.
We're at the root of the wisdom
of the dogs.
This building. Yeah. It's bizarre.
I mean, yeah. All I can think is three blind mice keeps going through my head. I'm sorry. Yeah. It just is.
Oh, my.
Well, anyway, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. We hope you've enjoyed this. Again, my name is Melody Goodspeed, the Inform and Connect podcast. If you want to check out the Digital Barriers Research Project or any of our programs, please visit afb.org. Thank you so much. Catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to Inform and Connect, a podcast of the American Foundation for the Blind. For questions or to find out more about the podcast, email communications@afb.org. Consider making a gift today to support the American Foundation for the Blind. Go to www.afb.org. AFB, creating a world of no limits for people who are blind or have low vision.